Good morning, everyone. Zach Arskadden coming to you from North Carolina. And today, want to take another step in the direction of standing, continuing to stand on the wall. And there's a lot of good things that have been happening lately. doesn't mean they're easy, but there are things that have been showing that they're, you know, there is a continual battle ahead, but that and this is the time for us to continue to stand. Now is not the time to back down, but more so the time where our faith and our light is needed in not only this season, but in this for the seasons ahead as well. So a few things I want to get to, and then I'm going to kind of dive deep on to the spending bill. There's a lot of news that has started to come out in and around the situation involving what is trying to be pushed through this $3.5 trillion spending bill. But first, we have news coming from Texas that I think is very, very, very interesting and quite ironic and moronic. From a certain standpoint, is there is a doctor in San Antonio who had this past weekend bragged in the Washington Post that he performed abortions after the law went into effect, the Texas heartbeat bill law went into effect. And he's basically defying people to sue him. Now, there are two lawyers who are two attorneys who have taken up his case to sue him. One from Chicago, one from in San Antonio, from Arkansas, and then there's a guy from Arkansas. The big question will be is, do either of those lawyers have standing in the state of Texas to be able to sue them for the damages, you know, the fine? One lawyer says he's not aware of it, but what he does say is he does say that he is not, one of the lawyers said this, he said he's not opposed to abortions, but he sued in order to force the court to review the law. Very interesting there. Part of his lawsuit in an AP article talks about how he's trying to challenge whether there's constitutionality in the law, which is very interesting. He wants to make sure here, declare that the new law is unconstitutional. Again, I've said this before, even in the DOJ's challengings to this, is they're claiming that this is unconstitutional, that it violates constitutional law. But again, they're not saying what constitutional amendment it violates. You're not hearing that. So it's ultimately good because I think it shows just where people are at. And I think that this is not that big of a challenge to take somebody to court over this. And good on Texas for allowing this to go through. But also, the Supreme Court, part of the reason why they did not block this law from going into effect was because there are cases still in the lower courts, one from the Department of Justice, and then others from abortion groups, pro-abortion groups, who are trying to stand up for this. Now, with everything going on with this Texas case, there has now been news out of the Supreme Court that the Mississippi court case is basically set for trial. There's a date that's been set of December 1st to hear on the direct challenges to Roe v. Wade, which, if ruled correctly, if argued and ruled correctly, will give the power back to the states. It will rid the court systems of the horrible precedent and decision made in Roe v. Wade, and allow each state to decide how it wants to implement laws in and around abortion and the viability of a baby in the womb and whether abortions will be allowed. Now, our prayer is and will continue to be not only for this Texas case, but for this Mississippi case as well, in that we want to continue to pray for those involved in both of those cases and for them to argue and rule on the side of life, and that their arguments would be made in a non-confusing way, I guess is the best way to say it. Because at the end of the day, a lot of what goes into these cases is depends upon who's arguing the case and how they're arguing it. And if they're not arguing it correctly, then the whole case gets tossed out. We saw that with past issues, especially dealing with this last election, is there were arguments to be made. The proper arguments were not made, and thus we have the chaos we have here. So, and a lot of this is, it's not just praying for the judges to rule correctly. It's praying for the lawyers and everybody on their staff to do the research that's needed, to be able to make the arguments that are needed based upon not only biblical moral values, but on proper legal arguments. Because any lawyer who looks at Roe v. Wade tells you that it was ruled improperly. So there's a huge challenge coming December 1st. So when you see this, now you start seeing why there's a lot of this spiritual activity. Is while even though it's dark over here, you have this glimmer of light that could potentially happen to save lives. And you'll really start to see the power of your local and state officials in determining whether life is allowed or death is allowed. And so this is a very, 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 very positive thing. Some hope to have for life now and moving forward. And our prayer now needs to be that this is ruled properly. There are other organizations. Dr. Michael Brown is a part of them. Other Catholic groups, Pentecostal groups, evangelical groups, Baptist groups, like everybody's involved to try to pray for a proper ruling on this. I mean, any denomination who is for life and organization who is for life is standing up and hoping that this is ruled properly. This is a once in a generation court challenge, court case challenge that is going to be needed not only now, but in the days ahead. So we want to continue praying for that. All right. On to some COVID news. Some interesting news came out yesterday out of the University of Alabama Birmingham Hospital System in Alabama, where they are no longer mandating per employee mandate, employer mandates for their hospital staff to be vaccinated. They're saying they're going to wait for more determination to come out of the federal mandate, but for now they're going to pull back. What is interesting, this is what I want to point out, what's very interesting is that they have between anywhere from 50 to 80% in different locations of their staff who have been vaccinated, but also they have, and they're going to continue to offer $400 to employees willing to be vaccinated, and other hospitals, some of their hospitals are offering time off and prizes. Okay, part of the emergency use authorization is to not coerce someone to take the vaccine. There are cases where people have taken it and have had adverse effects. There are cases where people have taken it and have died. A question I have is that if someone who were to have had an adverse effect, a health problem arise from taking this, I'm not saying that this is reality, but I'm wondering if legal case, if you were incentivized to take the vaccine and you received it and you had adverse effects, could you then sue said employer? And if the employer was then given money from, say, the federal government, is there a case there? I don't know, but it's a question that I have. And I want to point out this in the new reports that have come out of Project Veritas of the employee who has Jody O'Malley, who came out from the Department of Health and Human Services about some of the side effects and some of the things that are in these viruses and the fact that the federal government's covering them up. It's very interesting because she told Project Veritas that the reason she decided to speak up was following the death of her colleague shortly after her colleague was coerced into taking the vaccine. So this shows that this shows two things. One, obviously, we know the government is hiding something. There's going to be more reports out about it. Now, what is going to be done about these reports? Is anybody going to, within the federal government, going to do something to rule properly on this? I don't know. I think it's good that she's deciding to come out, but also too is that in all of this chaos, in all of this scenario, is people are awakening to the realities. And this lady did not take the vaccine because of what she called her religious exemptions. She did not believe that she should be coerced into taking it. And did not take it because of that, which I think is her decision. But also it's, we have to realize that, okay, even though this darkness is coming, the you know, what the enemy meant for evil, God will turn for good and can turn for good and is turning it for good, because you're seeing now people who see this stuff are speaking out, and long-term effects of that, some of your greatest intellectual minds have come out of situations just like this, of the Jimmy Carter administration, of other administrations before him, who have seen how the bad policies affect everyday lives of Americans and go in and look at what is a proper decision and end up on proper biblical decisions, sometimes knowingly, sometimes unknowingly. But they're looking for truth and they're looking for proper justice in a lot of these situations, and they come out refined. Names you find are Thomas Sowell and his whole line of thinking. He was a former socialist, a self-proclaimed socialist, and thought of all these policies as great, worked in the federal government, and then because he saw how horrible the decisions that were being implemented, God completely shifted him. So our prayer has and will continue to be to intercede for those, intercede for the Lord to rise up in the White House and his enemies to be scattered. Because right now, people are seeing the truth. They're seeing the writing on the wall. They're seeing the reality of these decisions that are being made, mainly because they're some of the people who are making these decisions, but also they're being forced in, to a degree, to being have to being made these decisions. And as we see more and more of this stuff come out from Project Veritas, because they say they're vetting thousands of not only governmental officials, but hospital officials, because they're being forced in, trying to be forced into taking things against their will. Look, it's everybody's conscious choice to be able to make this decision. Even BLM, if you've seen this, BLM in New York City is crying out that the vaccine passport and mandates do not go into effect. Even BLM can realize that this is not a constitutional decision worth standing on if you're the federal government. And the BLM leader in New York, he is actually a true believer of what he says. He's not one of those phonies who did it for the money. He actually believes it. So he really stands on it because he's not vaccinated. And the reports are in New York City alone, the African-American community is upwards of 70% unvaccinated. So I throw that bit of information out there to see that, look, even in this time of complete government overreach and what is darkness, there is a light through this, because people are awakening to the reality of this, not only on a natural intellectual mind frame, but on a spiritual mind frame. Which leads me to a scripture I was reading yesterday. In Isaiah 26, verse 9, the second portion of it, it says, "When the earth experiences your judgments, the inhabitants of the world learn righteousness." So we've been putting out a lot of prophetic about judgments coming, and talked about it with it that, look, through these judgments, God's going to bring forth light. But through these judgments, as Isaiah says here, will be what the inhabitants of the world, of how they learn righteousness. And so that's the scriptural foundation to stand on, to know that through this all, you know, God will turn what is meant for evil for good, and awaken the hearts and minds of people to his eternal hope and foundations for them to have faith and hope for the future. All right. I want to go deep here into the spending bill. I talked about it a little at the intro, and we've been following it along. I want to continue following it. We have prophetic to show that this agenda, not just this bill particularly, but the spiritual agenda behind it that is being pushed forward. They're saying the Biden administration is pushing it, but it's really Bernie Sanders who is navigating and pushing this stuff forward, and the spirit behind Bernie Sanders, the spirit that he operates in. Excuse me. And what came out yesterday was that, okay, we knew Kyrsten Sinema said she was not going to go with the Biden administration on this bill. But more information has come out where she has basically took a firm, like, I'm not voting for this based upon prescription drugs. And not only did she take that stance, but also 10 House Democrat members are also taking this stance as well. And they're saying that if the vote fails on September 27th, which somebody could remind me of what day that is. The 27th is, I believe, next Monday. So next Monday, the House is going to vote on whether to push this infrastructure bill through the reconciliation process into the Senate. If it dies there, if the vote fails, Kyrsten Sinema is saying she will not support it moving forward. These 10 Democrats are saying they're not going to push it forward. Also, that's huge on several reasons. Also, Joe Manchin has said we need to take a pause on that. He's taking a hard line on that. So we're seeing things set up for this bill to fail. But don't count out this administration, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, and even Bernie Sanders, to try to go back and force something to happen. And there's added pressure with what Janet Yellen is now saying, that there's a historic financial crisis awaiting if the federal debt limit is not increased. And the backstory on this is that in 2019, the then Senate did not increase the debt ceiling. Basically, what they did is they put a pause on suspended the debt ceiling, allowing, you know, to spend whatever until August of 2021. Well, now what is being called Yellen enacting extraordinary cash-saving measures to fund the federal government, which I think we have to look at the questions being asked right now of whether we should increase the federal debt ceiling or not. But we're not even asking that question. It's we have to in order to pay our bills. And then you want to add on another $6-7 trillion on top of that, and even more after that. So you're going to have to increase the debt ceiling continually, even if you do increase it now, just to fund things that are already on the books. Like the debt ceiling that they're trying to increase isn't just to get these laws passed. It's to make sure you can fund the government. And then you're also going to have to, in the future, increase the debt ceiling again to fund the things that they're trying to push forward through here. And Janet Yellen is saying in a matter of days, millions of Americans will be strapped for cash if we don't increase the debt ceiling. Talking about, which is very interesting. I called this out before, because this is the trick they always play of talking about how those who are dependent upon the government will be those who are supposedly going to be the most harmed by this. She talks about how nearly 50 million seniors could stop receiving Social Security checks for a time. Troops could go unpaid. Millions of families who rely on monthly child tax credits could see delays. America, in short, would default on its obligations. Again, these are welfare. A lot of it is welfare programs. It is the key point they're trying to push to try to use people's emotions against them and for their cause. they will use anything to try to do any to force politicians to do something. And then also she talks about how the quote unquote the U.S. has never defaulted, not once. Doing so would likely precipitate a historic financial crisis that would compound the damage of continuing public health emergency. She says default could trigger a spike in interest rates, a steep drop in stock prices, and other financial turmoils. So this is laying the groundwork for what we're seeing spiritually. But also with this, and this is really huge, is that Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer are trying to tie the reconciliation bill of the $3.5 trillion spending bill with the debt ceiling, which they said they weren't going to do before, which is very interesting. A politician going back on their word. Who would have thought? And obviously this comes from pressure from Janet Yellen. But what they want to do is they basically want to do what they did before in 2019. They want to suspend the federal government's debt ceiling so till through 2022 so that they can pass these things moving forward. If you've ever heard the term kicking the can down the road, this is exactly what they're doing. Rather than making the decisions to benefit future generations for us to be able to leave an inheritance to our children's children, they're saying, no, let our children decide on that. Let them figure it out. We're going to fund things to put money in people's pockets now, whether they need it or not, whether it's the right decision or not. We don't really care about that. We're going to put forward these social spending issues and push forward with adding in something they said they weren't going to do a couple weeks ago in increasing the debt ceiling. So the reason that's crucial is you're seeing now the battle start to formulate. Now that parts of the bill are coming out of what's actually going to be put in it. A lot of it has been theory, hypothesis, but it's really starting to come to light what is really in these bills. And some of it is still yet to be determined. You know, you got to pass the bill to see what's in it. That's the line that's being played here. But I want to go through something real quick from the Heritage Foundation. They do an analysis of what is being put out, what has been put out already. And some of the things I've talked about before, some of the things are new because as more comes out, more information is being able to be analyzed. So note this is coming from a more conservative standpoint of view, which is more of a capitalistic point of view. And this is where everything breaks down. You know, they have their three key takeaways. Is the first one is congressional Democrats this week finally unveiled the legislation. Okay, so we know that. Largest in 50 years. Second, and this is the goal. When you look at it yourself, whether it's through this opinion, another CNN, MSNBC, whatever, this is the outcome, and I would agree with this, that the goal of this proposal, which they're calling a liberal proposal because it is, it's more a progressive, regressive, as Abraham Hamilton says, is to put more of the economy's resources under the control of politicians and bureaucrats rather than the private sector. There's a host of reasons why, but that's the end goal. And then here are some of the eight things that they say are in this bill. So we know the basics of it, of some of the stimulus plans. We talked about this last week. So the whole theme behind the Biden administration was that they weren't going to raise taxes on anyone under $400,000. Well, again, Heritage Foundation confirms what we reported last week, that the Joint Committee on Taxation showed that that is false, that there will be tax increases on those making homes, families, and individuals who bring home more than $50,000, taxes will increase there as well. And if you remember that report, it also talked about how taxes will be increased eventually on those making between $30,000 and $40,000. So that's middle America, who this Biden administration, Nancy Pelosi, and everybody involved in this process said they will not tax. This is not who they're taxing. It's not on the middle Americans. This is coming out to be an absolute and utter lie. So that's the foundation of what they're saying. That's the line they've been running with. They continue to run with when asked about it. They continue to stand on that. We're not going to increase taxes on those under $400,000. that lie is being called out. Also, what is also interesting is of those in the 400,000, they're increasing taxes on them. Well, you could say, oh, well, they're rich, it doesn't matter. There's an intellectual argument as to why not to raise taxes on those who make over 400,000, over 450,000, those who make more than 5 million. It's not only because, you know, they have it. But if you look back in 2018, and this is starting to come out more and more, you've probably heard this, but of the top 1% of earners in America who brought home 21% of income, they paid in 2018, 40% of all income taxes. So of all the revenue coming in from the federal government is paid by the top 1%. And while the bottom 50% only paid 3%. So, and this information comes from, guess who? The IRS. This is not, you know, just random made up statistics. This is the balance sheets and revenues from the IRS. And to increase more, and I'll get into this here in a second, is to increase more on the top earners would prevent them from wanting and incentivizing them to make investments into the economy of America, which then limits business growth, job growth, and being able to provide for other people. And the whole line of putting things under the purview of the federal government is the goal of this. And that is the goal of this bill and the reason they want to increase taxes. It basically, as this line says here, these tax increases will only take more money out of the private sector and harm the economic recovery. Part of this bill also takes away, a tax on pass-through businesses. So businesses that basically don't get taxed at the business level, but then get taxed at the individual income level, it will now be double taxed, where you're going to be passed at the business level and at the individual level as well. And that's a theme within this, is they want to double tax in a lot of portions, which then prevents investments. And they also, I'll get to this in a second, but they also are wanting to tax on a continuous basis the capital gains. It's not only a tax on wealthy, again, it prevents savings, prevents the biblical foundations of leaving an inheritance to your children's children. There's also a report in the Wall Street Journal from this weekend that one of the options they're looking at is to tax, if you're leaving an inheritance, say a home, a farm, anything, any asset to your kids and you die, there's a tax that you're going to have to pay. This is what they're reviewing. This is Wall Street Journal. This is different than the Heritage Foundation. But they're saying that when somebody dies and they're leaving in a building or house, whatever, two kids, that there's a tax on the increased value of the home up to that point. So when it's bought to the point that it's passed along to their kids, you have to pay a tax on that. And then, which this is already in place, then the children have to pay a tax on the value, or pay a tax on the sale of the home as well. So it's double taxation as well. President Trump had prevented that from happening in the cases of farms in certain areas, and that's what that has to deal with there. So you're seeing double taxation there, taxation on capital gains. Also increasing corporate tax rates above that of what China taxes their corporations. They say here the bill would increase federal tax rates to 26.5. Europe averages 19.99%. Every country is different. And then China is at 26.5% or 25%, excuse me. Which what this tells you is companies will not want to invest in America. They're going to go where they can get taxed less. We've seen this happen before. This is why companies left America before Trump came in office. And then since Trump lowered the taxes in his administration, the companies started coming back because of situations unlike this, where they lowered the tax rates. Now you're wanting to go back and basically overturn everything. And also what they're doing is they're double taxing investments and savings, which limits the ability for small businesses to be able to make investments into their economy, into any economy, but also it will cause wages to go down, because as taxes go up, there's less money to share with your workers, and the wages are going to go down. So when you hear crying increased wages, but then also increased taxes, it's a double-mindedness, that it's a double-edged sword that they're arguing with, that really defeats their purpose. And this is a great line. It says any tax system that directly taxes both the inputs to production and the results of those inputs unduly penalizes investments in the future. These proposed tax policies do nothing to make people pay their fair share. They simply stifle the private sector, and as Winston Churchill put it best, ensures the equal sharing of misery. So what they're doing here is they're taxing it on an investment, any investment you make into the company, and on your savings as well, with increasing of capital gains tax. It will also increase penalizations in international trading, basically removing subsidies and other things, deductions that companies can take out in order to offset taxes from overseas countries, excuse me. And then one thing that's scary is we've talked about this before, how the IRS wants to add upwards of 85,000 employees, agents, and how they're going to fund this is obviously through this bill. But what they're going to do is give the IRS a lump sum payment of $79 billion over the next decade on undefined strengthening tax enforcement activities and increasing voluntary compliance, expanding audits, and other enforcement activities. And as of this current year, the IRS has a budget of $13 billion, which part of that, only $5 billion just for 35,000 enforcement agents. So they're going to ramp up the spending that is going to be involved with the IRS, basically making it a higher revenue source for federal governments. And when you add in, the reason this is alarming is when you add in complexities to the tax law and what you can be fined for, is most people don't know taxes now. Then you're going to add in more taxes where they could be penalized more, and then you add in more agents to hold the standard on that. You're going to see more penalties and more taxations, which means more government overreach, fraud, abuse is what they're saying, because this has been done. If you've seen the proposal of monitoring anybody who has more than $600 in your bank account and any transactions, they want to be able to monitor that. That has been discussed. That is not yet put in. Very alarming. And one thing the Heritage Foundation talks about is that rather than implementing more tax laws, making it more litigious and more of a burden for people to hold compliance to, it should be simplified. And that is not being seen the case. And this is where the mindset of, and the we talked about at the beginning of this, of where the outcomes are two different things. It's increasing government or decreasing government and letting the private sector go towards it. And what's happening through all of this is you're seeing the increase of the government being put through in this bill. Now, I say all that, I lay out the groundwork for a lot of it, is our prayer is and will continue to be, we now have a date for September 27th is when the House will vote on this. So we want to continue to intercede for both House Democrats, Republicans, and Senate Democrat and Republican leaders and officials to stand against the spending agenda that God has shown us will cripple the next 3 to 4 generations. We've been saying it, we've been praying it, we want to continue to pray that. Because God has warned us about what will happen if this is pushed forward. And part of this is basically the Green New Deal. We talked about that before. So hopefully this makes sense and understanding these policies that are being put forward and the biblical basis of standing against this, not only the prophetic, but is that, you know, there's a biblical principle in Proverbs that talks about leaving inheritance to your children's children. A lot of these tax policies prevent that from happening. and prevent, on a civic level, the private sector from being able to invest and save in this economy. And despite the fear-mongering from Janet Yellen and other congressional and Senate leaders, because there's Republicans and Democrats alike who are going to push this in the days ahead, is we need to be aware of the warnings that God has showed us. And judgment is coming one way or the other, whether this bill is passed or not. But it would be better to answer the question of what needs to be fixed in our system rather than continuing to go down the road of a broken system. So with that, I thank each and every one of you for following. I know I went long. I wanted to go to a little bit more detail on this tax bill and some of the things that are being pushed forward. Now that we have some information of what is actually being written in the bill. And again, I'll close with, if I disappear for a couple of days, it's because I'm on baby watch duty. Almost had a scare last night or exciting time. Almost went to the hospital last night, but it ended up being a false alarm. So thank you for each and every one of you who watch and listen. If I disappear again, it's not because I've disappeared from the face of the earth. It's because I'll be in the hospital and unable to leave. But I bless you. Thank you. We'll be back again today for those in Shreveport-Bossier for our noon prayer watch at Christian Center today and tomorrow. And then Thursday out on the street, depending on weather. So blessings to you guys. And let's continue to stand on the wall because we have souls to save and a nation to save in order to get back to the destiny of spreading the gospel of the kingdom to the nations. With that, I'll see you tomorrow. Have a good one.